Okay, so?
One of your deals may be going bad.
Confidential informant, we cut loose, you guys.
CI's name is Alonzo Stevens. He called us. We haven't spoken to him in 6 months.
How do I discuss this over an open phone line?
How the hell do I know? We got the phone call from Alonzo on an open line. That is the hand we have been dealt at 11:47 o'clock on Saturday night.
Now, I do not know what
case you have him on, but whatever it is going bad, and it sounds like it is going bad right now.
It can come back on me, baby.
This is FilmSack. Oh, sure. Hello, my fellow Earthlings, and welcome back to FilmSack. This is FilmSack episode 414, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind. I'm Scott Johnson, joined today by Brian, smells like the mid-aughts in here, Dunaway.
Ooh, it does smell. It's so stinky. Wearing that silver bodysuit in the club. No! Mm-hmm. Oh, hi. Mm. Hold on a second. How do you even operate this stupid old-style cell phone? Ah, you flip this, okay, and you flip this, and boop! Yeah, hello? This is the Detective Sonny Crockett of Miami-Dade PD. Pass me through to your sack! Hello? Weird, it sounds like I'm talking to someone's crotch. Hello? If you can hear me, I need to talk to your sack! The special agent in charge. Oh good, he heard me. Yeah, hello? What's my badge number and birth date? Listen, I ain't got no time for that. It's 11:47 o'clock on Saturday night, and Neptune is downstairs handing out booty slaves like an attractive bartender handing out mojitos. That's the hand we have been dealt. What's that? Hold on, I can't hear you. Tubbs, come on, man. I'm on the phone. You can't stand right next to me and make 3 and 4 phone calls while I'm talking on my phone. It's distracting. Go stand over there. Further. Keep going. Ah, shit. Listen, Sack. I gotta call you back. Tubbs just went over the side of the building. Hey, Tubbs, you can't negotiate with gravity. Talking while I'm talking. Now I really do need a mojito.
I'm glad I played the intro clip I did because it led right into your
thing.
I
was so excited. Yeah,
that was fantastic. Well done. Also with us, Randy, your sex scenes are too long and weird, Jordan.
Oh, yes. Aloha, Scott. Brian.
Hi.
Randy.
This is a little something I wrote called Waiting for Neon. Mm. Tubbs and Crockett's informant paid a high price for trusting Fed's plan, Miami Vice.
Oh.
Music so sensual, hot, and cold as ice. Undulating sunscapes, Miami Vice. Have sex with your girlfriend? She probably dies later in movie. Miami Vice. So many bad guys. You have to think twice. KKK, Russians, dope smugglers. Miami Vice. Waiting for neon, pink and blue light. This whole freaking movie. Not even one shot? Are you kidding me? Miami Vice.
Miami Vice.
I like those. You should do more of those. Those are good. Yeah.
Very zen.
Yeah. It's chilling me out. Although for some reason he was getting cut out a little bit and I don't know why. But not bad. Also with us, Brian, at least it has a cool soundtrack, Ibbit.
Oh, so true. So true and so appropriate for me. Mm. So you guys already might know this or be able to guess, but I've never seen the original Miami Vice TV show. So I was basically coming to this movie blind. And because of that, here are some things that I can now infer about the TV show. Miami is a dark, grimy place. Number two, high-speed motorboats and aliases are really easy to come by. Number three, Tubbs is not getting too old for this shit. Number four, everything in Miami looks like it was shot on a Palm Pilot.
Yes!
And finally, number five, Crockett mopes around like his pet Pomeranian just died. Oh, he's wearing it on his head.
You know, I feel bad that this is the only Miami Vice you've eaten.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I know enough about Miami Vice, and I know, you know, Don Johnson and Phil Collins and Don Henley.
Sure.
I've seen the intro. I've seen the jet boats, Go fast boats.
The go fast boats.
I need them go fast boats.
Go fast boats. I hate that.
What do these boats do? Well, they go fast.
It turns out they go fast. I don't know if you guys have heard of these.
By a 13-year-old.
Yeah. Dad, can we take the go fast boat again?
No, we're going to take the go slow boat, son.
I'll tell you what. It's
all the way to Cuba.
The dad sounds younger than the son for some reason. Right. but that bums me out because Miami Vice is one of my favorite my favorite TV shows of the 80s. I don't know why I said crap because I like
you
it a lot.
You can say crap TV show.
No, I liked it. I liked it a lot. It was just a really, really fun, trippy,
it was a music,
stylistic
It was an hour-long music video every week.
Yeah, it kind of was, but you had like... You had Emmy winners in there. You had Edward James almost won an Emmy for his role as the police captain Castillo, who he's not in this. He was offered the role. He turned it down to do it in the movie again. But instead, they replaced him with that big, heavy dude. I don't know his name.
He was too gentle. He was way too. Edward
James almost.
But yeah, I like the actor who plays that part, but he's just too gentle.
Yeah, he's too soft. Exactly. I agree with that. But it's a real bummer. And here's the bigger bummer. This is Michael Mann, who turned out to be, post the Miami Vice days, his own creation, turned out to be one of the best modern filmmakers ever, and made some incredible films. And we've seen Heat, and that was more proof of that. Like, that's an incredible movie. Holds up. Amazing stuff. I don't know. I don't know what happened here. I'm so bummed out about this. Because I liked this. Okay, so Randy and I had this very brief discussion a couple of weeks ago, or maybe it was last week, where I said, oh, yeah, Miami Vice gets too much heat. I actually kind of like it. I saw it in theaters. It was okay. But I only saw it the once, and maybe we'll see it again. It's kind of bad. It's very bad, this movie.
Okay, I have to disagree.
Okay.
Okay, I have to say that I saw this back, when it came out, and I was a little disappointed then because I did not feel like it was TV Miami Vice enough. And this time watching it, I got something totally different out of it. And we can talk more about it later, but it was just the long lingering shots that Michael Mann did and the looks that people gave. I didn't realize how important that was back in the show.
And boy, I hope you like that thing where two people don't trust each other, but they're in bed together, and they say a line and then stare at each other like, are you about to draw a gun? Because I might have to draw a gun right now from this pillow. And it's like, if that bugs you, because that no one in real life ever does that, and it's all over this movie, where people say a line and then stare hard at each other.
Oh,
if that
so
bugs
hard.
You, you're going to hate this movie. It's 2 hours of that.
Mm-hmm.
But
2 long hours of that.
For me, I think there's only one way to make this film. And a lot of people at the time were using these Thompson Viper cameras. He also used a Sony F900, which is a big stinking digital thing with this tiny 2/3 sensor. And he also has some 35mm shots, but you'll never notice them because you're so watching the grainy, harsh, way overgained, way overlit nighttime scenes and so on. And it after a while, this movie could probably wear on you. Do you remember the same feeling watching Battlestar Galactica? Because it was also shot with the same equipment.
You mean the remake, right?
Yeah, the newer TV show. I mean, I, for whatever reason, I don't know if it's a post-production thing or if it's because there's so many outdoor shots, but this thing looked like it was shot, like Brian said, on somebody's Palm Pilot or a phone or something. It's got that crappy early aughts, hey, digital, that's the thing. No more film, guys. Let's give this a shot and see what we think.
And it's just fine. It looked fine in day shots, but it's the night shots that digital cameras have always had trouble with. The sensors just haven't been able to.
And they're better now. They're way better now. They're 1,000,000,000,000 times better now. Plus, post stuff is better now. All that stuff. But the Collateral is similar. Another great movie he made, which is shot in this with the same cameras. And it just has this weird look, especially in the night shots. And I hate it. I find it annoying. I found it. It feels amateurish, almost like a YouTube series. Somebody said, hey, we're doing a Kickstarter. We're going to make a YouTube series about guns and shooting people. Let's do it. Like there's a little bit of that going on.
Fast cars and go boats and
yeah, but it doesn't have the like warm quality of like Heat. Heat has this just really great shot. I mean, it's all film, but you know, like it doesn't have that at all. So it doesn't even feel like a Michael Mann movie. But besides that, the sound work is really bad. People are mumbling here and yelling here. And
no, let's be straight. There's only one person mumbling.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
Colin Farrell. Hey. Colin Farrell will not speak up. Colin, speak up.
Yeah.
Interrupt for 1 second. Randy had to jump out for to fix his microphone. Can you pull him back in? He's in call waiting.
Oh, yeah, I can pull him from call waiting. Hold on.
And the bad part with Colin Farrell's character playing Sonny Crockett is he does mumble so much, and you can't help but to draw comparisons to the TV series where the actor there spoke with such clear dictation and slow, you know, so it was such a different...
And what was really weird with that is that it felt like Colin was having a harder time covering up his accent in this one, but he's done American roles before, like Phone Booth and
lots of movies.
Buckshot. Daredevil. He's the bad guy. Bullseye.
Buckshot
actually throws like 50 cards at you and hopes one of them hits you.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Here's a spray.
I'm not so worried about accuracy.
Yeah.
I'm Buckshot.
That's right. Here's your patago. Like, it did feel like it was always just under the surface and ready to explode. Yeah, but it's it's a really weird affectation, and he always just seemed kind of short and Tasmanian devil like to me.
Yeah,
like the whole movie just kind of like, yeah, his suits are too big, they're too wide, and his pants are too big, and his hair is ridiculous.
That's part of the style concerns about the movie. But when we talk about his voice and his acting, I don't understand why he was cast in this role. It's just, it's too much of a stretch for him. Like, he looked great. Hey, don't get me wrong. I think he's just like, wow.
I think that's why he was.
Yes. Right. Yes. And that's too bad. Because, like, you see the, you know, also considered for the role list, and it's like, no, that's a bunch of nonsense. There are other people that could have played this role. You know,
I think Mann was going, he said, I need some actors who can glare. So bring me in your best glare face. And I think Colin Farrell just won that because he has a great concerned glare face.
Oh, yeah. No, he totally does. And I like him. I'm generally kind of a fan. I prefer him in things like in Bruges or where he's like, you know, himself or it's his real accent or whatever. His other Irish-like roles that he's in, there's something very manic and cool about him. I just think he's really miscast here. I also think Tubbs is miscast. I don't think either of these guys truly carry forward the torch of Don Johnson and Philip Michael Thomas or whatever his name was.
Yeah. Jamie Foxx is funny because Jamie Foxx he's the person according to trivia who was the spark that started this film because he whispered in Michael Mann's ear. It's like, oh yeah, we should really do this. And then once he actually put him in it, he's like, no, I don't want to be on boats or planes. I don't really want to even be here.
He got irritated because he won an Oscar between the start of production and the end of production. And at that time he was getting paid less than Colin Farrell. Colin Farrell was a bigger star. So now he's pissed and wants more money. Like apparently he went full diva.
Yeah, and the character Tubbs was a bigger part, supposed to be a bigger part of the story, and they just kind of they've kind of swept it under, which was kind of disappointing because I was really looking forward to it.
Yeah, but Tubbs was always a secondary.
He was always a secondary character. Yeah. I mean, he was like right below Sonny's crocodile on his houseboat, right?
Yeah. It's like, and they didn't even have the houseboat and the crocodile, like all these things that made that stuff great. There was like they should have gone pure. If he did it again today, I'll bet he'd do this. But they should have gone just like all in on the some of the stuff that was kind of over the top and stupid about Miami Vice, and just accepted it and not tried to modern it up or dirty it up or grimy it up. Straight to the throat.
That? Mm. The movie that does that and admittedly comes later is Pain and Gain. The Rock. And Mark Wahlberg.
Oh, I haven't seen that. Tell us about Pain and Gain. Tell me about it. What am I missing?
That movie captures all of the things that you think are missing from this one. like to
crocodiles
really,
and boats.
Yes, and to give you the to give you this full bright picture of Southern Florida, which this movie just like, I'm sorry, this movie wants to be a Los Angeles at night movie, mm-hmm. and it's just set across the country. You know,
mm-hmm. yeah, it was always they dealt with nightlife very little. Daytime, which is not true of the original series. The original series did a lot of daytime shots as well as night shots, but this was all took place during the seedy underbelly of Miami.
Yeah,
Dade, right?
And it was always, and I think the film carries this forward, but it was always this ridiculous idea of what vice cops were up to and what their lifestyles were like, and the car they got to drive, and the clothes they got to wear, and the jewelry they had all over their hands, like. It was always like, okay, there's nobody in Miami yeah. is doing this, but it didn't matter. We bought into it. It was cool. We knew that they were ultimately going to do the right good guy thing. Like even in this, at the end, as hard as it is, Crockett, mm-hmm. you know, Sonny has to turn her in. Like he can't carry on this life. He has to turn her in because it's the right thing to do. Like they get some of that stuff right, but I just think this thing is all style, very little substance. The show was a lot of style and just some substance. Like it doesn't have to like go John Wick direction or go give me some characters I want to care about.
Yeah,
I cared about Sonny and Crockett in the TV show.
Even Bad Boys, I think, does it better than this.
Yes, Bad Boys. And there's another example.
There's another problem with this movie is we all had seen Bad Boys, and again, I hate to keep bringing up Michael Bay, but. You know, Michael Mann has this other thing that he's supposed to do, and we saw it in Heat a lot, which is where you build all of these characters up, and they all have these relationships with each other mm-hmm. and these interesting motivations that you give them, and that is different. Michael Bay would never do that, right?
And
so, like, I'm waiting throughout this whole film. I'm like you know the scene in the trailer when they rescue Trudy and... there's an agent who gets a moment of badass
she's
where she talks
awesome.
About
yeah.
how fast she's gonna kill
oh,
this
yeah,
guy.
Yeah. She's from Orange is the New Black too.
Yeah, she's right. great.
In that moment, I'm like, oh, what a great little line and everything. I'm like, wait, this is a Michael Mann film. I should know everything about her by this point.
Why don't I? Yeah, up till now she just stood around in rooms and stuff.
The secondary characters of the crew, just besides Trudy, were just like to the wayside. I have no concern. But I watched the Netflix version, which was 2 hours 11 minutes, and I know that the real version is supposed to be like almost 2.5. I wasn't sure if we.
Well, the director's it's a director's cut thing, but yeah.
I'm sure I watched the director's cut the second time I saw this. This is my third, so I saw it in the movie theater, and then I'm pretty sure I saw a director's cut at home on Blu-ray, and now this, and I haven't seen the movie in at least
Was there a scene that Crockett and was I confusing this with the TV series, or was there a scene where they were in this movie and they were kind of like in like the drainage ways, and they were talking outside of the car, and was that a finale from the TV series or something?
I don't remember now. Now that you say, I don't think it was in the director's cut, because I also want to say I saw at least part of the director's cut, maybe not the whole thing, so I guess I can't say. But the
am I going to be useless on answering this question? Yeah, first time seeing this movie, first time seeing anything.
Again, I don't want to say this too many times, but how did they not think about the TV show and end the film with the two of them getting on the boat and driving off on the water,
yes.
or the two of them getting into the Ferrari?
Because Jimmy Fox said no boats.
Yeah,
sure,
right.
Okay,
that's true.
But by the way,
we could have a stand-in. I don't need to see the back of his head.
I don't remember him. I don't remember him having that problem in the TV show. By the way, that no boats thing is horse shit.
I think that was a Jamie Foxx
thing.
Yeah,
it was a personal thing.
Oh, you mean Jamie Foxx didn't like to be on boats?
Yeah, yeah. He's like, I'm not getting on boats. No, you can forget it. I'm not getting on a plane. Forget it.
How awesome if after the heartbreaking letting her go thing, she's going to Cuba, he saved her from prosecution, so now he's in deep shit too. Mm-hmm. How awesome would it have been if she rides off and then Tubbs pulls up in the Ferrari and then they get in the Ferrari and just drive up the Key West Highway or some way, something like, you know what I mean?
With the sun going down. Yeah. Well, Randy's right. They didn't embrace that part of the partnership. They wanted to kind of make these guys separate in a weird way. And that's a mistake. Like the whole point of Miami Vice is these two guys, 100% dedicated to each other, have each other's backs, way too cool for school. they needed to drive off into the Miami sunset together. It's stupid that they didn't.
Right, right. And they were trying to, from the interviews I've seen about this movie, they were trying to divorce themselves from the TV series. I don't know how, but they were trying to keep themselves separate from it.
It's a mistake.
Which was disappointing.
It's a mistake.
Yeah, huge mistake.
And maybe you pull some of that from the TV show, because I did not feel like there was any of that in the movie. Like it did not feel like these two guys really liked each other, and you could replace either one of them with a new partner and they would do just exactly the same thing.
That was always the conflict in the original series, because you're touching good guys who are flirting with criminals and bad guys all the time, and you're always constantly trying to watch each other and make sure that you're not going in too deep and that you can come back out. Yeah. And they had some of that in here. Like you guys said, just could use more of it, more buddiness.
Yeah.
Buddy.
Yeah, you're going to do that. Yeah. Just do it. And it was so many long shots of nothing. Like, the show had that
too, right? Long shots of nothing.
I know the show had that too, and I don't want to pretend like Miami Vice wasn't about the eye candy, because it always was. But there are moments in this movie where actually a couple of times I went, I wonder if I just tapped forward a couple of times on my remote, if I would still be in this shot and not miss any dialogue. And sure enough, it works. It totally works. Yeah. In fact,
this movie's runtime is like 15 minutes.
It's about the visuals so much more than anything else. And it's like, this movie has such good bad guys. Like, the way they are cast, the way their wardrobe works, the way, you know, like John Ortiz has this, like, these glasses that he wears the whole movie.
He's cool.
The guy who plays Jose Ayero.
I'll agree with you on him, and that's it. All the other villain types.
The guy who plays Montoya looks just, wow.
No, I just thought he looked just stupid to me. He looked like a guy that should be in a diaper and sitting there looking dumb. Like, he just, there was that dead face where it's just like, I only pay for results. Get out of my car. Yes. I found him to be ridiculous, that guy.
Yeah. Right, yes. It's so tropey, too. I mean, not that the rest of the film isn't one massive trope.
I like the fact that they left a lot of threads hanging, because they had like an overall arcing bad guys in the TV series. And that's one of the things they did here. We had several layers of bad guys that they were dealing with in different stages of the investigations were going on.
Threads hanging. Give me a trope alert, because
hold on. Where is it? Right here.
We have not seen a better example of chicken the bucket since Wild Wild West. This movie starts with them doing an investigation in real time. Bunches of agents in a nightclub. I don't know how you do that without everybody in the city knowing who you are. But bunches of agents in a nightclub. Some crap is going down. They've got CCTV. They've got eyes on their prize. They get a phone call and just leave.
Yeah.
And it's like, what? The rest of the movie, there's a bad guy having a three-way in a room waiting for the cops to come bust in. The rest of the movie.
What about Neptune and girl number three? Why was she crying? And why was Tubbs so upset about
it? They beat the shit out of her. They kicked
girl
the crap out of her, too. I hated that.
Girl number three got dragged out of the club and then dragged into a car and then dragged all the way up the A1A and then dragged to an airport. And so the whole movie, girl number three is being kidnapped. Yeah. And we never know what happened.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Massive chick in the bucket, that whole sequence. I thought you were gonna say the guy who I used in the intro today. Let me play that again by itself. Hold on.
Mance Rayner.
No, different dude. This guy right here. Where is he?
Oh wait, you played a clip from the movie at the top of the show. I thought that was a clip from the voice acting in Resident Evil.
No, it sounded pretty bad. Okay, this guy right here.
It can come back on me, baby.
This guy who's like he's rich because he's a informant, whatever, and they keep coming to him.
Yeah, Mr. Potato Head, you mean?
The guy that looks like looks like the underground potato people from the movie we watched last week. Yeah. I thought you were going to say him, because I was sure when I saw him, I went, oh, well, he's dead. How soon's that going to be?
He spends the whole film sitting in this amazing condo. the whole rest of the movie. He's just sitting in his condo, afraid to leave, afraid to make a call.
Yep.
That guy is
afraid to even turn on one light, more lights than just the one directly above his head. It's like a 200 watt.
Afraid
McDonald's
to.
Am I being interrogated right now? Why is it so hot in here?
Yeah, it's like you wanted to watch Dark Crystal and look at his people one last time or something.
Right. Can we talk about John Hawks for a second,
Wait,
though?
Can I throw in one more chick in the bucket?
Yes,
before
please.
We get to that.
Yeah.
The pin that Crockett pulls out of the grenade to like show that he's a big tough guy falls clearly on the floor somewhere in that room when he's when he's acting like I'm tough.
Right.
You don't want to mess with me, drug lord. Da da da. They leave the room. He never picks up the pin to put it back in the grenade. So what does he do? Just like find a convenient trash can, close the lid.
I assume he held it the rest of the show.
Hold this forever. Here, hold this for a second.
Just held it for the rest of the thing.
Back pocket.
Yeah. The true chick in the bucket is the person he handed it to and said, don't move, and then walked away. I assume that was a dud anyway. I mean, I could be wrong, but I assume that was never a real grenade and he was just, you know, freaking those guys
out. What about the pin and the grenade?
Well, it's a pin, but it's a fake grenade is what I mean. I think
it's a real grenade, but fake pin.
Yeah, no, the other way around. But I think he was just trying to, you know, hey, look at me, I'm tough and whatever. Also, once you've done that, by the way, once you've done this thing, this is also annoyed me. Once you've said, hey, we're actually Sonny Crockett and this over here is Tubbs, Rico Tubbs. We're actual people who work in Miami Vice. We are the drug dudes and we're deciding to go bad. We're deciding to be bad cops. And because of that, we have all these connections and all these ways to do things. And we have the cover of being elite agents or whatever.
That was not their cover.
Well, not that part, but they were using their actual names.
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of like James Bond. Yeah. It's like, I'm James Bond. Well, I know who you are.
Yeah, shut up is what I would say to those guys because use fake names because the minute you use your real names and you decide that your mullet and your glasses and your stupid suits are all you're going to ever wear, now everyone knows who you are. No, you're never going to be able to
everybody,
do an undercover
everybody
thing.
Who touched that USB drive, which was about 100 people, by the way, gross, get some Purell. Everybody knew.
Yeah, no, they all know who those guys are. And that travels around. It gets through other drug networks. Like, what are you gonna like?
That
sequel
that
should be them working
at
a Chick-fil-A or something. It was just weird.
That didn't bother me at all because as the movie starts, we're told what their names are and we're told that they have never had their cover blown. So that doesn't bug me. Their real names, their real actual birth names, were probably something else. But
you mean other than Sonny and Tubbs?
Yeah.
Well, no, they use their full names. It said James Sonny Crockett Jr.
Pulled up.
Yeah,
on their fake stuff. But I'm just saying, like, that doesn't bother me. What really bugged me was that early in the film, right, we find out that the feds are compromised. And the feds are working with, like, four or five different agencies. We don't know which one is the one that has the mole. And we're never going to find out about that, by the way. That's going to be the problem's going to be solved. We're going to find out which one has the mole, but we're never going to find out what becomes of that. Like, we never know that it was a person and what their motivations were. Nothing.
Yeah. But well, Mance Radar. This is the Mance Radar guy that Ibbot was talking about before.
Mance Radar.
Or Raider. What is it? Raider? Rainer?
Choppers. Choppers are coming, Jon Snow.
About two-thirds of the way through the film, sitting on a boat, Jamie Foxx suddenly comes up with this plan where he plants the seed of a fake delivery and tells the one guy they can trust to tell every Fed agency a different date, and then they see which one jumps on it. And I don't understand why that plan wasn't put in action the minute they found out they had a mole. Why did it take them days and some guy from the Miami Vice Police to come up with how they solved that problem? And why wasn't it a bigger problem? I just don't understand that. Like, why? And then, by the way, once they figured out where the mole is, they don't have an operational security issue anymore. There's another thing. I don't think Michael Mann really thought this through, or maybe he rewrote it a bunch. I don't know.
I felt like he just phoned it in. Like it is really, honestly, it felt like, okay, fine, I'll do this. This is really in my past. I made 7 seasons of that show and I don't really want to do it, but I guess I can do it. And then it just turned out bad. Like, It's just not. Yeah. It's so far from I would never think this was even a Michael Mann movie if I didn't know it was.
Like, right. I can't say if it's too much attention.
Yeah.
And too much attention was paid to the style, the look and the feel of the film than an actual storyline, non-tropey storyline.
I'm having trouble divorcing what my expectations were to what I actually saw. And I actually want to go back and watch it again. Because my expectations were definitely, I was for sure disappointed. But then I'm like, well, let me go back with some fresh eyes with no expectations and see what the director in some of these, you know, some of the visuals and try to see if there's something enjoyable there, because this does actually enjoy a little bit of a cult following. I mean, it's it's got value.
I guess
what that is.
I guess I don't have a problem with that. I just have this issue of like Ibbot coming to it with eyes that have never been laid on any Miami Vice material.
Right.
Is interesting because you're like, too much style, not enough substance, basically is what you're saying.
Totally.
And and I would argue that what part of what made the TV show great was lots of style, but it had some substance. Like it was a lot of this sort of same thing, and that's why it seemed so cool, because no other TV show was doing this. So it felt like oh my gosh, this is otherworldly. This Miami Vice show. All the other dramas seem stupid compared to this. Part of that was just the look and the feel and the eye candy, but then they were characters you cared about with lives and stuff going on and acting that wasn't one note. Like it was more than that. So even though I've seen all that and you haven't, we agree. Like all you had to do is see this movie and know. I don't think you have to see the show to then appreciate the movie. I don't think they're even connected that way. I think this is just him not doing a good job like he did with the show.
I'm going to draw a really weird comparison, and it's not a direct comparison, so don't take it as such. It's just going to be a visual comparison. Uh-huh. What do you guys think about Casablanca?
I watched it with Tom recently.
That's a really good comparison here. I hate to sound like I'm joining in stretching, like let me join hands with you and we will stretch. But Casablanca, like I'm sure at the time Casablanca was a very entertaining film for people who had never, like literally never seen movies back then. Mm-hmm. But nowadays, if you watch Casablanca, or another example is the Orson Welles Triumph.
Touch of Evil?
No. The Red Rum movie.
Citizen Kane.
Thank you, Citizen Kane. Yes. When you watch a movie like that, nowadays you're just gonna go, ooh, boring.
Did you say Red Rum movie?
I knew it.
It's okay. Rosebud.
All right. I was a little confused.
It's all the same.
Casablanca is beautiful, and it's beautiful in an odd way. It's not beautiful like you're used to, you know, 35mm color shots of, you know, landscapes being beautiful. It's different.
Yeah, I agree with that. That's a fair comparison. I saw that recently with Tom Merritt for another show, and it was definitely, I came away with that vibe of like, hey, the tone is what rules the day here. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily plot points. There's these
long lingering shots, and it's, you know, it's meant to have the actor and actresses perform, you know, just by with little to no dialogue and just sitting there, and you are reading what they're thinking somewhat. And I felt like there's a lot of that here, as well as I love the shots that they were taking. And not only did they do landscape type shots, like these really wide scenic shots of the city at night, and they also did it with the people. They treated every shot, even with people, they treated the bodies like it was part of the landscape.
And by the way, I know this is a little bit of another stretch, and you are probably going to disagree with me, but I felt like Colin Farrell and Lee Gong fell in love. Like I was oh man, this is really working.
Yeah, yeah.
And a lot of filmmakers would have muffed that. They would not have left you feeling like there was real chemistry between those two people.
She seemed like she was never making any other face than just the one face.
It's funny, I had that in my notes too. The only time you ever see her facial expression change is when they were dancing in Cuba. And she actually smiles and
totally disagree because she has has the hardest shot in the film, which is at the end when she's next to the car in the middle of a gunfight.
Oh, she's
and
realizing.
Crockett pulls his badge out. And it and the camera, it goes right to her and she's badly lit. And you have to see on her face the realization that everything she knows is wrong. And it and I thought it was incredible. I really do.
Well, that
and she
okay.
was and she was so mad.
I'll,
she
give,
was
you I'll give you that one.
Yeah, she was so right. upset. And the character, the way the character reacted too, she was so upset, but she was not, you know, afraid of going to jail or you know, finally having to pay up. She was just, she was mad because he had really messed with her heart.
Yeah, I mean, he did. And that's and you know what? That is also true to the Sonny Crockett character from the show. Like they played around with that a lot. And he's pretty messed up. He's pretty damaged. The series had seven, or I don't know how many seasons it was, however many seasons it was to explore that. This tried to do it without much pretext. It was just sort of, here it is, it's happening. Oh, I guess he's you know, reckless with personal life stuff. And oh, okay, we get it. But the TV show is a lot better about, I think, explaining that stuff over time. I mean, Colin Farrell admitted once to Total Film in an interview. He says, I didn't like it so much. He probably said, I didn't like it so much, because he used his real accent.
Pass my Blarney Stone.
He says, I thought it was style over substance, and I accept a good bit of that responsibility. It was never going to be Lethal Weapon, but I think we missed an opportunity to have friendship, or have a I'm friendship that also had some elements of fun. I agree with him. I totally agree with Colin Farrell.
I'm glad it wasn't Lethal Weapon.
Well, we don't want it to be Lethal Weapon, but and he says that it was never going to be Lethal Weapon. That's literally what he says. He says it was never going to be Lethal Weapon, but I think we missed an opportunity to have that friendship be more meaningful.
Right, right.
Yeah, true. Yeah, I mean, just a little bit of fun would have been welcome.
Yeah,
in this, because that's such a dour movie.
Yeah,
yeah. That's what the houseboat and crocodile were for in the original series. I mean, because I was watching this with Audra, my fiance, and she was just like, "Ew, I'm waiting for them to tell the jokes. There's no jokes."
Yeah,
and I'm like, "Yeah, again, that's not this movie."
Again, watch Pain and Gain. It's like Michael Bay watched Miami Vice and was all, "Okay, I'm doing everything else."
Yeah,
right.
And to whatever. You know, I have still haven't seen that.
Why aren't we watching Pain and Gain?
Yes, we watch Pain and Gain.
I'm putting it on our must see list.
Yeah, stick it on there.
It is a film sack movie for sure.
I've never seen it. Tom Cruise, Brad Pitt, and Matthew McConaughey were, wait for it, what? All considered for the role of Detective Sonny Crockett.
Now, McConaughey would actually be an interesting character.
I 100% agree. He would have been great.
They kind of flip-flopped that. Did you guys see the HBO series True Detective?
Of course. Yes, that was amazing.
Yeah, and so we have a little bit of flip-flopping here. So I think those characters are kind of, you know, they're kind of.
I think Matthew McConaughey would have been awesome. He would have been.
McConaughey was born to play the role in the first season of True Detective.
Yes.
15 years ago, though. No way.
Really?
No, right. No way, man.
Because he
would be
too young, and he was too much still in that, like, I'm a funny stoner guy. He had not at all.
Well, he was like 30. He's like 37 or 38.
He was the same age.
This was 06. He would have been
the John Grisham thing that he was in. Time to Kill?
That was 90s. That was 90s. Sometime.
Yeah, and he'd been taken seriously by that point. So
he would have been fine. I think Matthew McConaughey was in his he's in his mid to late 30s. He could have done it. He's the same age as what's his name.
But what would have had Miami Vice riding around in Cadillacs? I don't think so. That's not gonna
also
like his finger like. All right.
I know that Colin Farrell's skinny, like all actors are.
Yeah.
Like they're all actors that we see are so skinny that when you see Jamie Foxx without his shirt on, you're like, wow, he's buff. Mm-hmm. No, you know what? He's skinny. It's just you're seeing a guy who's like normal skinny as opposed to Matthew McConaughey, who is grotesquely skinny. If you see him in real life, seriously, he looks like a stick mannequin that the clothes are hanging off of.
Yeah.
And I need my Crockett to kind of look like a guy who could get in a fight.
Yes, yeah, yes. Yeah. That's why McConaughey, when he was at his buffest, right around the same time, I think he'd been perfect. Tom Cruise had already done Collateral with him, so he could have done it, I suppose.
I would not want to see that.
I don't know. Ugh. I don't know. No. I'm not 100% sure that wouldn't work.
I need, because you know why? I need people driving around in cars. I don't need people running around. Okay? I'm not going to have you running down the streets of Miami.
Yeah, but how else are they going to make money on this movie if they don't have Tom Cruise run? That's the deal.
Right. Yeah. Also, there's something about Don Johnson's defining of the character that like leaves you with very little wiggle room. You know, like you can't just plug someone into this. They have to be the kind of person that could wear a Cuban hat and
some wicker shoes.
You know, but yeah, like who could do that? Who can wear that Bahamas wardrobe? You know what I mean? Like, and it's just that's just not something everyone can pull off. Like. I don't. I'm having a really hard time thinking of who.
Yeah, but do you do that in 2006 though? I mean,
yes, absolutely.
I think that McConaughey could have pulled that off. I do. Maybe not Cruise, probably not Pitt, but I think McConaughey could have done it.
Yeah,
I would want to see
McConaughey's in some new thing called Beach Bum that I do want to see, where he basically plays Crockett without the smarts and badge
and job. Yeah. But, So it also says Will Smith, Denzel Washington, and Samuel Mother effing L. Jackson were considered for the role of Ricardo Tubbs. I don't know if I'd buy any of that. Will Smith, maybe. I could see Will Smith being approached.
People would absolutely be comparing it to Bad Boys. Sam Jackson and Matthew McConaughey, I would have loved to have seen that.
That would have been interesting. That would have been a real interesting take, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
You need them to be really close to the same age because they have to be bros. Like, they have to be really, really tight.
One of the mistakes in this movie, though, that they get wrong, that the TV show laid out and then they just couldn't match it, was the casting of Tubbs, because Tubbs was more of like this Islander type. You know, way more sort of Calypso, just different, not street tough, not gangster at all. Mm-hmm. And so the way that he was played by Jamie Foxx was, I think, was just not him. I mean, it's just different. And it was them going, well, yeah, it's 2006. Let's go for somebody who's clearly got, you know, gangster vibe going. And I don't know if that was the right way to go, because the other guy was way more like, yay, Crockett. We didn't have an accent, but it was just like, you know, it was a lot more.
he was very laid back. He was always kind of, even though he would get into the action, he was mostly just there just to watch Sonny Crockett screw up his life.
Yeah, you know, really? He really was.
Crockett, come on, man.
Yeah, he was like his conscience. He was like his little, it was almost like the angel on Crockett's shoulder half the time, trying to tell him to, you know, pull something out or do the right thing. But when it came down to it, like something, a big bust or whatever, he'd pull his gun out and do what he had to do. Mm-hmm. But he was just more fun.
Mm-hmm.
Both of them were, to be honest. Like, John Johnson was more fun, and he would joke, and he would piss off the police chief, and he would make jokes when he was doing arrests, and he was great. Yeah. Oh, it makes me want to watch Miami Vice, the show.
I want to watch the same thing. After I watched that intro the other night, I mean, all my Friday nights during the 80s came crashing back, because what a weird time to have a TV show that you felt like you had to be home to watch.
Yeah,
Friday night.
Totally. How long did that run? What was the year it ended? Do we know?
It was at least 6 or 7 seasons, right?
Yeah, but I'm trying to think if it ended in the 90s or not. Like, it's 90. So it ended in 90. 84 to 90.
84 to 90.
Yeah,
just like the 80s, this ended right at 1990.
Yeah, so if you look at the entry, like it's just the photo entry thing in the, or any of the pictures, if you go to the IMDb listing for the show, even just the look of Tubbs is more.
Okay, I got it.
Do you know what I'm saying? It's just less Jamie Foxx. Jamie Foxx is like rapper guy.
I've now thought about this for years and years and a few minutes. And I have decided my dream casting for this movie, if I can go back in time and pitch it, because it would take a lot of pitching, because he wouldn't immediately know who they were in 2004, 2005, is Josh Brolin and Mekki Pfeiffer. And Mekki Pfeiffer is the guy who played Dr. Pratt on ER for a long time.
Yeah. I could see Josh Brolin. That's a good one.
Oh, yeah. Like everything about him with longer hair just says to me, like, he could do this role.
Yeah, and especially in 06. He's looking real crusty now, but I think back then he could have done it. But whatever, I'd take him now. I'm with you. Pretty much I'll take him in all movies. That's kind of my rule. I think he's just a badass.
Man, you know, now, Ibbitt, I really hate that you missed Miami Vice during the 80s, because I'm telling you, it was like the Love Boat of cop shows.
If you replace Charo with Phil Collins, right?
Kinda,
right,
exactly. But even more than that, like all the guest stars of the day would come on, and it was great.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, Don Henley would play one week, and And it wasn't.
Problem and solution all in one episode, or was there an overarching
combination? There were multi-episode story arcs, but they never were like important. They were just like running gags and things.
Yeah, but sometimes it would be like Crockett. It would be more like personality flaws carried over a season. Like Crockett sucks at relationships, and so multiple episodes of him trying to resolve an issue with a girlfriend of his. But most episodes were crime and punishment.
And I mean, like, there was like a whole season, I think it was 88, when he was dealing with like an athlete's foot from wearing those wicker shoes with no socks.
the topsiders.
They're so gross. Oh my gosh, it's gross. That would be my grossest thing in the movie if Colin Farrell was up to that in this, but he wasn't. I noticed. Yeah. He
didn't. Did y'all notice that there's no ventilation in topsiders? Right.
Uh-uh. You know, that was those soft linen type sports suits they wore like in the original TV series. I swear the guy who was having his way with the prostitutes was wearing that same suit from early on.
Yeah, that felt like a bit of a throwback. But I noticed Sonny was wearing that shirt like that. Kind of weird flighty whatever. My favorite scene in the whole movie, honestly, anytime any movie goes to Cuba and they start playing some of that rad Cuban music.
Okay, so I've been wanting to talk about this because it's such a like schizophrenic movie about the music. Like you might think, oh, it's just going to be all like hot and cold, real smooth. No. This movie has like Moby and Mogwai in one moment and freaking Linkin Park and a bunch of Chris Cornell in another. And it's like, would you please pick a style? And you realize, no, they're putting a different style on everything. Like you're in a club, that's one thing. You're in Uruguay, it's another thing. They go to Cuba and Manzanita, not just the song, the band Manzanita is on the stage and they're playing this song called Arranca, which is so freaking hot. I'm just like, pull the camera back and just watch this for 5 minutes. Seriously.
Listen to this. Let me get in here deeper. There's something about Cuban music, specifically Cuban, that puts me somewhere, man. I don't know what it is, but geez, I love it. This movie is
steeped in that kind of thing, and I loved it. And I also loved that that they had like Audio Slave was hitting the scene, and that was always Lee Gong's or Gong Lee's her character's like love music every time she was on screen and she was getting hot.
Chris I was Cornell super into that background. Audio Slave business when it happened, and that was him collaborating with, because he'd left Soundgarden and
Tom Morello,
right? I remember thinking
Tim Comerford,
and I remember thinking, man, this is the best thing ever. I can't believe these guys are together. And then they didn't do it very long, but I loved it for when it lasted, and it was good to hear Chris Cornell singing.
Oh yeah.
If you set out to do this again, though, there's no way you would have these like Moby Mogwai songs.
It doesn't make you think
South Florida.
The show was full of Jan Hammer and all that. I mean, that the show was full of those like weird ethereal electronic ETH sound and things. I think they're totally appropriate here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I love the intro music to the TV series, and I did not realize there was two different versions, because I was always familiar with the second and third season intro, which was very fast. And like the first season, the very first season has like this slower version of it.
Yeah.
And it's just, it sounds weird. It's like, oh, what somebody put it.
Trying to find one of these Moby tracks was really cool. Is this it? Oh yeah. Like this. I love just like wall of sound, electronic stuff. I mean, it almost makes the movie better for me because that stuff was in there. I think the soundtrack generally is awesome.
Yeah. Where were Crockett and Tubbs driving that was so much faster than old what's-his face who was trying to get home? Because they were on top of a building, had to get down to the parking garage, you know, get out the gate, and they still was able
and catch right up to a pull alongside and hey, pull over.
So that's a F430.
Ferrari,
It is a very fast car. There's actually there's a neighbor of mine who has one.
it's a go fast car.
I have a neighbor who has an F430, and it's like so discordant to go to freaking Albertsons for groceries And this guy who lives in the neighborhood has it parked out in front of the grocery store.
Right.
Yeah, it's a Ferrari, right? Ferrari.
Yeah.
Love Albertsons.
I mean, and that's consistent. Sonny had that cool white Ferrari in the series, and it was just always so much fun to watch him drive that thing. And, you know, they kept all that stuff.
But even if you're going twice the speed of his other car, still.
Oh, yeah, I mean, downtown Miami on a weekend with parties and all. There's no way you got out of there. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, that was dumb. And the guy that played him, he's in all sorts of stuff, that guy.
Oh yeah, yeah. That's what I was going to talk about earlier. He's in a lot of stuff, and I loved him in this part. And oh my gosh, it was the most. It was a couple of times I felt the heartstrings getting pulled. And man, Jamie Foxx, Tubbs telling him, you don't have to go home. It's like, ooh,
yeah, that's so funny. All right, truck coming, great. Yeah. Convenient semi.
Rough business.
Tried not to laugh, but that blood smear was bad.
Yeah. Oh, it was so bad.
Eddie Marson is the actor, by the way.
That was John Hawks.
British actor.
Isn't that John Hawks? That was John Hawks.
Yeah, I thought it was, too. Thought
Nicholas was...
No, you're talking about the guy in the house.
Oh, Nicholas was Potato Face.
Yeah, Potato Face was Nicholas. John Hawks is the guy that got run over by the bus on purpose, and he was, for me, most famously in Deadwood. He was the partner of... what's his name?
He always played such a
Raylan Givens partner. He's awesome. Great guy.
So a piece of trivia that took me way down a rabbit hole about the car. Obviously in 2006, you're expecting to see a newer Ferrari, and you do. In the series, when you think about the Ferrari that you saw them driving all the time, you're thinking of a Ferrari Testarossa. That was like a car for our generation to aspire to ever get to touch.
Yep.
And But in the early seasons, like in the first season, the shows didn't have any money and they wanted to put the leads in a Ferrari, and the producers literally could not afford to rent a Ferrari and insure it and so on. So they went to a car supplier who had a body of a Ferrari that they had put on a Corvette. And so Don Johnson is literally driving around a Corvette with a Ferrari body stapled to it.
That's awesome. Because they were all fiberglass, so you could pretty easily move that stuff around depending on the frame. Yeah.
It's really funny that that sounds janky, but that's how you make TV. Yeah. Like you don't have the money yet. You gotta do it.
Sure. Justin Theroux. Did you guys know Justin Theroux was in this? He was barely in it, but he played Detective Larry Zito. Who was that in there? Because Justin Theroux is a big deal now, but back then nobody knew who the hell that guy was.
You see him more than once just standing around, like all these different times when their like investigatory crew comes together. He's just there.
Oh my gosh.
Okay, yeah, okay.
You guys gotta see this. Hold on a second. Check that out.
Okay, so we have a picture.
Oh.
It's that guy.
Scary.
That doesn't look like him at all.
Not at all, right?
Weird.
Wow. No kidding.
Anytime you pull up.
That's the television series, Larry Zito.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Wait a minute. Oh, you're right. Why is this coming up? That's not him. Hold on.
Poor old Detective Larry Zito.
Anytime you pull up a picture, like every now and then I'm just like searching for a picture from this film. It's so dark.
Yeah.
Every picture. You're like, why don't they brighten that?
I can't find any images of him. Except the old guy, who I know from other things, too. That dude's in all sorts of stuff. Right. But I can't find the... Oh, there he is. Okay. Well, he exists. And apparently he was in it. And I don't remember how or what. But there's his face. Enjoy. anyway.
There's another thing about this movie that visually was... It was just an awareness that almost everything was happening outside. There was very few things that were happening inside, and if there was a shot inside, it felt like they wanted to get outside.
Hey, can we step outside this mobile home for a little bit and shoot each other?
And I kept thinking to myself, no, stay where the AC is. Like it's hot in Miami.
It's so hot. Doing?
Yeah, but having the whole thing happen during hurricane season in the story, and having thunder constantly everywhere. Kind of cool, that's pretty neat.
I kept trying to attach that to the lightning happening and to the elements in the story, and it's just like, okay, it's this
Michael Mann is just known for getting the same shot over and over and over until something happens. Like he apparently famously got a shot for Collateral of coyotes walking across the street behind the main actors,
right?
Yeah, they're all
and it just happened that he had shot the scene over and over and over, and some coyotes happened across the street in Los Angeles, and it's like Like this is what he does. So it doesn't surprise me, but it's still, I'm still like, I have this little thrill when you see the lightning in the background.
Yeah, I did too. It's funny. We're gonna keep filming this until something. Either you guys do better acting or something interesting happens.
Yeah. Now is he just done right now? Like, this is a guy who did Manhunter, The Insider, Last of the Mohicans, Collateral, Heat, like some amazing films. What's he doing now? Like
retiring.
Nothing?
He's chilling out. He's eating. He's drinking some mojitos. Wow.
He was a producer for Luck, that thing that on HBO that. Where horses died.
Yeah.
What? Filming. Horses died.
Horses died. Yeah. It was a thing about horse racing.
Oh, with the, yes.
Dustin Hoffman.
Dustin Hoffman. And a bunch of horses died in the making of it, and they made him shut the production down.
Yeah. He's still doing stuff. He's doing, what, Hugh?
What the hell is Hugh?
Hugh 1968, a TV miniseries I've never heard of.
I haven't either.
Is that not Netflix? I thought Hugh was Netflix.
Okay, the last movie he directed was 2015's Black Hat. It starred Chris Hemsworth and Viola Davis.
Yeah, I actually enjoyed that.
I don't know anything about that. It's not
Black Hat Hackers.
Does not enjoy a good review anywhere.
It was all right. It's 5-4, it's middle.
Maybe he's just needs to be, maybe he's just like, I'm good. I've done a lot of cool stuff. I think I don't need to make any more movies.
Yeah, he's good.
Because what else? Public Enemies was good. Miami Vice. So really, since Miami Vice, he hasn't really had a huge hit. And that, that bums me.
Take a break. Take a knee, Michael.
Yeah.
Is this good?
I found a bunch of pictures of Justin Theroux in this film. And in every one of them, he's got this really cool gun called an OA-93 on a strap. Yeah. And it got me thinking, gosh, there's a lot of strapped guns in this movie. Like people they like to tuck the gun under the jacket, but have it hanging from their shoulder.
Right.
Like that's like a style choice. That's, I don't know. It just sounds risky and like unnecessarily dangerous to walk around with, and everybody's doing it. So you're like, they're trying to impress each other. These guys are all trying to look like the guy that impressed them originally.
Yeah.
You're right. And I actually enjoyed I felt like they had some new Foley work for some of these guns because
they had guns I've never heard or seen before.
Yeah.
Like again, that thing where, Gina is about to take out a guy who's got a bomb around Trudy's neck.
Mm-hmm.
She's got a gun called a H&K G63. Yes. I'm sorry, G36. H&K G36.
Yeah.
And I'm convinced that they actually took the gun into a studio and recorded it being fired.
Yeah.
Because it just like, I'm just like, wow, that's a cool sound.
Well, Heat
and you felt
was like
you were
that,
in
remember?
A trailer with it.
It was like that heat shootout on the street is very, very much like that. And he's always been a stickler for that. And that's great. I liked that. And that's it. By the way, I use that gun when I play Counter-Strike. It's a great gun.
Did you guys get the H&K grenade launcher that Jamie Foxx uses to kill the,
that was awesome.
Main bad guy?
Yeah.
And, oh my God.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
Put a hole in him the size of a pancake. Oh. It was awesome.
He was good. That guy was good. That
actor. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I liked him. He creeped me out. The way he just stared.
What was the actor's name that played Saeed in Lost?
He's not similar, but they
have similar hairstyles, and I was like, oh, this kind of reminds
me kind of the mullet, not quite a mullet, but still, yeah.
And
yeah.
Lost was around the same time, right?
Yeah, 06 would have been the middle of Lost.
Third year,
yeah. 04 to, yeah, it would have been second or third year. It was the bad year. That was the year they were doing all the repeats because of the writer's strike. That was not a great year.
Yeah. Right, right.
So I was going to say this other thing here. About the, I have two questions. One, do you have to make your sex scene so obnoxious? They annoyed me.
I was wondering if we were going to bring up the, you alluded to them at the beginning. And yeah, the sex scenes were just so long and uncomfortable.
They just were just not.
Disagree.
They were not attractive sex scenes. They were annoying. And
I disagree. I didn't feel like they were long at all, which was good because I was worried they were going to be really long. I mean,
they were really the only music videos in the movie. Like you have a little bit of boat driving music video, but for the most part, the sex scenes have to do all of that lifting. And like I say, it could have been so bad. Like they were totally like fine compared to movies we've seen where the sex just looks wrong and impossible. And This was fine.
It's not fine. The way she kept staring at him with a dead face all the time. It's like,
but I think maybe you have trouble looking at people staring in movies, because I thought there was a lot of emotion going on in the eyes.
Part of it is, you know what part of it is? It's these cameras again, and it comes off as fake looking to me. Like, it takes away.
Well, not to mention, we just had Tristan move back in this last week, and it just always seemed like whenever Tristan or his friends would show up at our house, it was during some dumb movie that had 30 seconds of sex scene in it. But that's when all these kids would walk into the house and think that we were just sitting there watching porn all day, all night long.
Did it happen again? Did it happen again with this movie?
No, but the whole time there were so many long sex scenes. And I think that's why they felt really long to me. It's like, all right, okay, come on, just get through this.
Any minute now, Tristan's going to walk in with two of his buddies.
Yeah,
exactly.
So,
but there was a lot of shower sex scenes. There was two. I mean, both the main actors got to do a shower sex scene. It was like Jamie Foxx said, "What, Colin Farrell gets what sex? No, in the shower, me too."
Also,
I won't get on a boat, but I'll have sex in a shower.
Also, not into the. I would not want to be the driver of that limo that had to deal with the freaking
the backseat sex,
impromptu sex in the backseat.
Oh yeah, right.
Just like, okay, I just pull down the shade, whatever the middle shade is.
Well, sure, yeah.
Absolutely. You guys have fun back there. This sucks. So can you? Okay, here's the other question. Can you just get a boat and drive it to Cuba? Is that a thing you're allowed to do? Like,
yeah, I mean, I think there's still, like, at the port, they're probably still going to check your passport and all that stuff, right? I mean, I guess she had a way to kind of sneak him around through the back entrance of Cuba. But
they established early on that Crockett and Tubbs just did it wherever the F they wanted, because they would fly planes into a single blip. You know, they were constantly, you know, passing lines and going wherever they wanted to.
Flying planes. Like vice cops fly planes.
This movie is made a few minutes before we all get used to GPS and satellite monitoring and so on. Like
smartphones.
Nowadays, we're just like, there's no way there is anything even slightly warm that passes between those two countries and isn't seen by all sorts of governments. But I was willing to let it slide for me. The notion was that they were going too fast to be tracked or something.
Yeah.
Right. And it's like, that's fun. I realize in real life, by the way, any boat going faster than like 30 miles an hour is going to hurt bad.
Yeah.
But in a movie, I loved thinking, oh, they're going like 50 or 60 miles an hour.
Right.
Looks so good.
Yeah,
it
I love that fun. Kind of stuff. I love all I could think go
of,
fast boats.
All I could think of was that meme video of the people on the motorboat bouncing around.
That's like the
stays parallel with the side of the boat, and everybody else is just going flopping.
You know what's
like,
great
like
about that video? Fish. My favorite thing about that video is that every person in it is their own comedy show. So like every single one, if you watch it once and pay attention to the driver, that he's really funny.
Yeah.
Watch it again. Watch the bikini girl in the middle. Oh my gosh, she's funny. Like everyone falls in such a ridiculous pratfall way that you can watch it 10 times to get all 10 people's reactions. It's so good. But it just struck me as why are we really allowed to do that? And if we are, great. I mean, I'm into it. Like I think Cuba's rad, and culturally we should like be a little more open to Cuba. And I don't know why we're not still.
Yeah, we are now, right?
We're
getting there, right?
Yeah, certain people are rolling that back. Certain people are rolling that. Oh, yeah.
I don't know if I was Cuba, I'd probably be rolling it back too. No, wait, a huge mistake.
Well,
nope.
It's more on our end, but anyway, it's not.
So it's been the case forever that like Canada pulled out of that a little embargo, and you could just fly to Canada and then fly to Cuba all day long. The thing in 2016 was to relax all of the trade. So, like, they didn't really make it so that, like, United Airlines is flying to Havana, but you can.
Yeah.
Like, you can, there are flights from the U.S. to Canada that you can show your passport and Cuba. Show your passport and get right off the plane.
Yeah.
What a romantic thought it is, though, to look at Cuba and see how they adapted with all those embargoes by keeping all the things they had in such pristine condition. And it was like, especially the cars and things, you would see shots from Cuba and be like, oh my God, look at these old cars, but they're in such great shape.
Yeah.
It's like a whole country of cool stuff.
Like old Cadillacs from the 50s and stuff like that.
Right.
And then I just assume when I walk into that place, it'll just be this all day.
Yeah.
And I want it to be. That's what I want. Right. I want to go there and I want to do that.
You're making me hungry for a nice pressed sandwich with pickles and sliced pork and everything in it. Oh,
I love pressed sandwiches
because it's so literal. What are you doing that sandwich?
Yeah.
Thing?
I'm pressing it.
I know. Yeah. Pressed sandwich.
Pressing it. Putting it together. Yeah, no, a good Cuban.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
And I don't mean the cigars or the people.
Not Mark. Not Mark.
No, not Mark Cuban. I mean, he's all right. But I don't know if I'd call him a good Cuban.
Just to really put a point on how far we instantly came after the Obama administration sort of opened up Cuba for the U.S., the Fast and the Furious franchise went in there and immediately filmed the first scene of the Fate of the Furious.
Yeah.
And if you haven't seen it, it's fantastic.
Yeah.
They got it at the right time
because some of that stuff got tightened up again. But yeah, they went down there and said, yep, we're doing it. Let's go.
I don't know the reality of Cuba or their lifestyle or anything else. I just know it's a very romantic thought as an American to go to Cuba and experience this.
You guys remember the old Kevin Costner movie, Havana? No, was it? Not Kevin Costner.
It was Havana.
Yeah, but that wasn't Kevin Costner. That was a Sundance Man.
Redford?
Redford, Robert Redford, I think.
Yeah. Yeah,
Sundance Man.
I am totally
down with that new Costner and Woody Harrelson.
Oh, I'm so excited, dude! It was all I could do last night. I log in to watch this movie, and all I could do not to stop it and go watch that. Ugh, it's like made for me. I can't wait to see. I'm gonna see that today. I think I want to see it so bad. Anyway, so there's that. Hey, clips, maybe some clips.
You got clips. I bet it was a lot of people staring.
It's not a lot, to be honest.
Do you have to turn up the
Colin Farrell parts to put them the same volume?
Except for the parts where he yells F you really loud to somebody.
I was going to call it closed caption, but it's just Colin caption.
Colin caption.
I turned it on so I could tell what he's saying.
It's still your CC, but stands for Colin.
CC, yeah.
Here's a.
Pass it through to your sack.
Here's a. If you're looking for some drugs, here's a list of them.
We got meth, ice, glass, E's, K's, X, Mitsus, Ames, Colombian H.
There you go. White supremacist.
That was such
drugs.
Any single letter is a drug.
That was such a 2000s kind of a thing where we thought it was clever to have somebody sit there and recite off all the names for a thing.
Yep.
It just annoys me now.
Yeah. Do you notice, by the way, also a lot of his movies have these white supremacist bad guys in it? You notice that?
He doesn't like the white supremacists. Mm-hmm.
Weren't there some?
They're Nazis. They're easy.
Not a fan of the white supremacists.
Right.
Yeah.
I agree, but I was joking in my poem at the beginning, it makes no sense to have too many disparate groups of bad guys.
Yeah.
Like there's a point where you're like, okay, so I guess to everybody in the universe is in a gang and it's like a different gang and warriors come out to play. And I'm like, I need my bad guys to be a little less discreet. You know? Yeah.
I was hoping that we'd have someone like this guy. Right here.
Diplomatic immunity.
What do you want?
Stop playing.
So hard not to compare this to Lethal Weapon, which is funny because it went the opposite way, movie, series to TV show. And I love both of them. I mean, I like the first two Lethal Weapon movies anyway. Mm-hmm. But the TV show has been great, and especially the swap out of country dude to Scott. What's the guy, Stifler from American Pie?
Oh, Stifler. Jason
something,
Thomas.
Scott something.
Scott Thomas Scott. Powell.
Oh,
my gosh.
Sean William Scott.
Sean William Jason Scott.
That's it.
Sean William Scott. That's it. Yeah. He's been great. It's kind of the new Riggs like character.
Yeah.
Which I'm too bad because the other guy was so. He was literally broken, though, right? He was emotionally broken like that.
Well, they're both broken, but they're differently broken. Like, the first guy was functional. Broken like Riggs. Yeah.
Right.
But they're broke. But he was literally, in real life, also sort of broken, and they had to fire him.
He totally was, yeah.
Yeah. So I didn't know that they hired Sean William Scott.
Now it's Sean William Scott and Damon Wayans, and it's really good.
It seems kind of like perfect casting to me. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Here's your... next one. This is some angry acting, so check this one out.
What, did you jump some amateurs into a game they ain't ready for?
What the f*** happened, man? Cleon got killed.
Cool down.
What did anybody just say? There was lots of words, and I understood some of the single words, but as a cohesive conversation,
Do you have to drive to the worst part of the town and the most remote awfulness at the middle of the freaking night to have any meetings in this, like this movie? Absolutely. That's all the meetings. Yeah.
Absolutely. And what was up with the streets of Styrofoam? That was a concern
so
I didn't remember from 2006.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I love that. I love how anytime they left the country and now we're in South America somewhere, mm-hmm. like you knew instantly, this is a completely different place.
Yeah. The streets of Styrofoam.
That? All these kids digging through Styrofoam.
We have a lot of Styrofoam, don't we? We sure do.
Yeah, that was kind of cool.
Explanation, no thanks.
Yeah.
Just driving through, fellas.
There's a lot of this talk, I felt like. So here's this.
We didn't come down here to audition for business. Business auditions for us.
Yeah, a lot of that. Here's another crappy rhyme right on top of it. Here you go.
They didn't do time with us, they ain't doing crime with us.
Oh, come on.
I actually like that line.
If they didn't do time with us, they ain't doing crime with us.
I gotta admit. I'm like, well, that's very narrow.
If the glove don't fit, you must acquit. Yeah. What else we got?
Just because it rhymes doesn't make it good advice.
Yeah.
Right? Right, exactly.
If you're not here, you're not drinking beer. And it's so dumb.
Right.
Here's one.
Beer before liquor, never sicker.
Yeah, there you go. Nice. Here's an ominous. I just wrote ominous. So here you go.
That part of what I do, you never want to find out about.
I think he's a little. Oh, yeah. He's got Yoda disease or something.
That part of what I do.
Let's do it again.
That part of what I do, you never want to find out about.
He's still cool.
I kind of do now.
Yeah.
Continue.
Yeah. Keep telling us. All right. I wrote here. What is she saying? Because she had a hard time. Here's this.
If you want your dad, you'd be no longer drawing breath in Miami.
Okay.
If
that would be
wanted
dead.
You dead.
Yeah, you'll
drawing
no longer
breasts,
be
drawing breasts in Miami.
Yeah, drawing breasts. I saved the latter part.
You'd be no longer drawing breath in Miami.
Because it's funny, and I don't know if I think it's funny because it's just someone with a very thick accent that's having a hard time saying a thing, or why I think it's funny, but I do. And I'm happy. I will own that, okay? Call me racist if you want, but I think it's funny.
Okay.
All right, here's the bad guy.
Excuse me, because I am very busy. I have many things to do, so this will be brief, yes?
Ugh. I hated that guy.
Yes.
I think I've realized why I like him so much and why you hate him so much. Mm. Or why I like him so much, at least. I think that guy is a really good portrayal of what you have to do to be on top of a criminal organization, which is you have to be murderous, and everyone who ever meets you has to know it. Like, that's the only way you can stay on top of a criminal organization, or someone who is more murderous than you will just kill you and take your place at the top.
I guess so.
And it's like, I just got that feeling from him, like, man, I would get out of this car. He is about to kill people. Like, I like it.
I normally do. But he just was in his dumb shorts and his flea shirt. And then later he's laying on the bed with his socks on. And I couldn't take him seriously. There was just something about him. And that beard looked painted on. I don't know. It's just not this. Maybe it's just the wrong guy for the role. Here is
a flea shirt.
Yeah, what now? What'd you say?
You called it a flea shirt?
Yeah, I don't even know what that means. I just made it up.
Okay. All right.
Flea shirt.
It's full of fleas. It's full of fleas. It's like, really, it's
like, something that the guitarist from the Red Hot Chili Peppers
is wearing. He doesn't even have a shirt, so that's perfect. So
that's true. Flea never wore a shirt. It's a flea shirt. All right. Here's a terrible exchange, so enjoy this one. I think this is indicative of some of the crappy dialogue. Here you go.
How fast does that go?
Goes very fast.
It's a go fast button.
Tell me.
Where would you like to go?
What do you like to drink?
I'm a fiend for mojitos.
Good thing he didn't say vodka, or else they would have been on that boat for hours and hours.
Right?
And hours. Days.
A fiend.
Where do you want to go? What do you like to drink? I asked you first.
Yeah. Also, when you say, how fast does that go? You're supposed to say 400 miles an hour, not pretty fast. Right. It goes fast.
Yeah.
It's a go fast boat.
When they got off their go fast boat and was in Cuba, and they were outside the hotel thinking about going inside because they didn't like to do inside very much in this movie. They were still doing outside.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Were they right next to the T-Rex motel, or was that just the Rex motel?
Oh, I don't know.
Because I couldn't tell if there was a T cut off or if it was just Rex motel.
The place that Pee Wee Herman chased Bluto around.
That's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
Pee-wee Herman chased Bluto around. Wait a minute.
You don't remember that? Yeah, you remember that?
Bluto?
Yeah. Yeah. He was all mad because he was trying to get with his girl.
Right.
Yeah. Not okay. Bluto really, but a guy who looked like Bluto.
Yeah, but I just was, yeah, my brain went in four places.
Large Marge is dead.
I got like four Horcruxes now. People have to discover and put back together. All right. Here's a. I hate this line, but here it is.
You cannot negotiate with gravity.
Shut up.
I love that line.
It sucks. You can't.
I like
negotiate
it so much. I put it in my intro.
Well, you may as well say you can't negotiate with the laws of thermodynamics.
No, that negotiate. Would be dumb.
It's all dumb. Like it's all. That's a dumb line.
I really thought that line was so prominent and the only thing that he said that I could actually understand. I was like, wow, they really focused on that. I mean, like, was that foreshadowing? Yeah. I was thinking someone's definitely going to die by falling.
Yeah.
But they didn't.
They never did. Maybe they negotiated and it turns out he was wrong.
Yeah, they did. Come on, gravity. Yeah. Come on.
Come on, gravity. Let me go. Okay. Or as you would say, hold on. You'd say this.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, final clip. This is that badass line with the girl in the trailer. It was actually a really great little exchange. So here's that.
That's not what happens. What will happen is I will put around at 2,700 feet per second into the medulla at the base of your brain, and you will be dead from the neck down before your body knows it. Your finger won't even twitch. Only you get dead. So tell me, sport, do you believe that?
And then he goes, and then, pfft.
Yeah.
That, exactly. Yeah. He tries to say something cool and she cuts him off with breath.
Yeah.
I
really did like that.
That whole scene was really good. Them approaching the trailer and them dropping out the audio to where it was just, you know, them kind of approaching was just, I thought that was great. And then they followed all up with that stupid worst explosion I have ever seen, special effect of the trailer blowing up.
It was pretty bad. It's pretty bad. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was laughing at the idea that Jose is somewhere. I don't know where he is at the time, but he's got his own control center, mm-hmm. and he uses like a cheap phone to call in the bomb in the trailer.
Yep.
I don't know why. I just was thinking, like, what if he couldn't get a signal, or what if it like you know,
it
just seems so
right?
flimsy for this important thing.
I agree. Also, why was he watching all those poker people? What was that about? All those videos.
Oh, he had what he said. He has a lot of clubs, and one of them has a black market casino.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. This is all these screens were overhead cams of poker games, and I just thought, Wayne, aren't you like you should be up to some dastardly drug enforcement business thing deal, not watching people play poker. I don't know. That just threw me a little bit. Mm-hmm.
He's the eye in the sky about 80 miles away.
Yeah, there it is. Like every Vegas. Remember, Brian, someone's looking at you like that when you play poker in Vegas.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Some guy in Cuba just like,
He's going, you don't want to know.
Wait,
about the
and he
thing
has
that
a bomb under every poker table.
Yeah.
That's right.
You have to call the right phone number to kill people.
That's right.
Oh, that bald guy just rolled craps again. Jeez.
Yeah. And then he says this.
That part of what I do, you never want to find out about.
Yeah. All right. Let's do. Ooh, look what just showed up. This is the Film Sack Checklist. This week we've got worse cameras than a YouTube series. Check. What happens when you get an Irishman to speak like a Texan? Check. And they were so busy making this movie, they never bothered to ask if they should.
Oh.
Check. Trek Connections this week, brought to us by the Trek nerd Daryl Skeels, we have Tom Towles. He played Coleman. Don't forget Towley. To bring a towel. He played Han Thill in the Star Trek Deep Space Nine episode Dramatis Persona and Dr. Vape in the Star Trek Dr. Voyager Vape. Episode Rise. Dr. Vape. That's a cool name.
He stands around vaping.
Yeah.
Vanilla. Which is a better name, Mr. Vape or Tom Towles?
Right. I don't know.
I'm torn. Tom Towles presents Dr. Vape. There you go. Pashta D. Lynchnikov was a Russian FBI agent. He played a Romulan commander in 2009 Star Trek with Eric Bana and all those people. Nice job, those people. Soundtrack, great. I give it an A. I liked it a lot. Everything on there's cool. I've been listening to it since. And
it's so good. I have probably listened to this soundtrack 1,000 times in the last 15 years. Seriously, 1,000 times.
If it didn't have this soundtrack at this level, I would have really hated Miami Vice. because it does help it. It elevates it. And it did it in the 80s show, too. I'll admit it. It was, you know, music and tone were everything. And it had that, too. So, you know, for its time. Like, no one thinks of Phil Collins as cool anymore, but I can feel it in the heat.
Not even Phil Collins.
I was going to say, Phil Collins might.
Yeah, he might.
His current U.S. tour is something like "I'm Still Not Dead Yet" or something like that. That's the title.
Yes. Oh, really?
He suffered from a little bit of depression there for a while, where he was trying to deal with the loss of his fame, and that's something we probably, I don't know. We do say that, but that would be
I'll never experience that.
Not that level,
right?
No, whatever, man. I still say
I can't lose what I don't have.
I still say the Tarzan soundtrack is awesome. So I'm not a hater. I'm a lover. Mm. Let's move on to the Twitter post. This is where you guys sum it up in 280 characters or less. It's the Twitter post. First with Randy.
Miami Vice. Michael Mann's third or fourth best film is still better than everything Roland Emmerich ever made combined. Mm. Suck it, Emmerich.
Liked The Day After Tomorrow, though. I liked that one.
It's been a long time since we've had a good Gibbet versus Deluxeaway battle.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I agree. Yep. It's been you could have stopped with this. It's been a long time since we've had a good Gibbet. Just sounds fun.
Good Gibbet.
Sounds fun to say. Also, Brian Dunaway.
Also, Miami Vice. Like Trudy would say, I ain't playing. Also, this was like a 2-hour staring contest set to some music.
Musical staring contest. I like it. And finally, Brian Ibbett.
Miami Vice. I can feel it coming in the air tonight. Nope, just a fart. Miami Vice.
Now I can smell it. I
actually wrote it just like that, except mumble. Miami Vice.
Miami Vice. Miami Vice. Well, all right then. You've all done well. And that means that someone's just handed me a piece of paper. This paper says alternate titles. Looks like it was almost called Miami Lice, but that was mostly just for Colin Farrell. Because he had a lot of weird hair problems. Okay. Uh-huh. Or the Miami Spice Must Flow. All right, moving on. We got an email from Columbus, Ohio, sent to us by Jeff, who wrote into the show at filmsack@gmail.com. And he says, hello, I had a thought that the writers of The Kingdom of the Crystal Skull decided to end that movie the same way that Dark Crystal did. Just seems too familiar. Love the show, though. Jeff.
Circle of aliens, circle of Skeksis, or circle of combined Skeksis.
Hots, whatever they were.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's a fair point. Kind of went that same way, didn't it, at the end? Spielberg pulled
and
the quickie.
And then Fizzgig, he jumped in the refrigerator.
We should give credit to that guy who did the film edit of the Fizzgig
sound.
That was
great. Yeah.
It was so good.
See it on Twitter. Yeah, we had a... Let me see if I can see who it was.
So you have to... If you didn't listen to last week's episode, you got to go back.
Yeah, and find it and link it, by the way.
I noticed that a sound sounded like a thing, and then we have to... How do we get people to see the video?
I'm
trying to look it up now.
Yeah, if you can find it, Dunaway, put it in the thing. I'll actually play it with the Star Wars dialogue as well.
Yeah, Extreme Heights Productions is the Twitter handle. X Heights Prod is the actual Twitter account.
X, like an X, letter X?
Letter X, Heights is in Afraid of Heights, and Prod... short for productions.
Okay.
Chad is the guy there. So
okay.
Chad's the man.
Ty Fizzgig on YouTube if you look.
Oh, there
it
you
up.
Go. Just search for Ty Fizzgig.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh, Ty Fizzgig.
And that's Ty Fighter Ty, T-I-E.
Yeah, like a tie you'd wear on your neck, sort of deal.
Mm-hmm. So good. I just killed.
Here it is. Okay, I'm gonna just play this because this is great. All right.
Let me ask the rebel base will be in firing range in 7 minutes.
Brilliant.
Squad leaders, we've picked up a new group of signals. Enemy fighters coming your way.
My scope's negative. I don't see anything.
Pick up your visual scanning.
Here they come.
Excellent catch by Randy.
The only thing that would have made that better is to make it easier for people to know what that sound is, he needed to have a shot of Fizzgig at the beginning. Yeah.
Yes.
So that you can see what you know what it's from.
Yes, that would have been perfect.
Because
otherwise,
in the TIE Fighters.
It is the dead ringer sound for the TIE Fighters in Star Wars.
I 100% agree. There needs to be that visual. In fact, Chad, if you edit it and change it, we'll smear that all over the internet because that's amazing.
What a great community we have.
Yeah, we do. Sure. That was great. Anyway, a good email there, Jeff. We got one more from C. Coulter, who wrote in and says he has a subject line as Logan's Run. He says, I haven't heard the episode yet, but I thought I'd give you some background on the TV show that was shot at the Bonaventure Hotel in Los Angeles, California, before it opened. Yeah. The glass elevator went very fast because there were no restrictions on it, no public access. So he must have had this scared out of him, he says. Yeah.
Oh, that is super scary.
And the Bonaventure is the one that's got the elevators on the outside. It's like cylinders, right?
I think so.
Yeah, right. The high anxiety, Mel Brooks thing for high anxiety was shot there, if I remember correctly.
Wasn't that one of the first of its kind? Because now there's a lot of buildings like that, but I think that was like an early thing. Mm-hmm. And there's a scene in, what's the one with John Malkovich is the bad guy and Clint Eastwood is the Secret Service guy?
Where he's a police, or he's
Secret Service,
security
right?
guard for the cop, for the president.
Secret Service.
Line of fire.
Couldn't remember it. That's a great movie, first of all. Second of all, we should sack that. Third of all, they have an elevator scene like that with a bulbous elevator on the outside. I always remember.
And I want to say that one we watched with Christopher Walken and Johnny Depp, Nick of Time, was also shot there.
You know what makes my testicles run right up into my body? What? Thinking about any elevator that has no regulations. Every elevator should have regulations. I'm not getting on anything that doesn't have any regulations.
You know what it made your testicles right up into your body that I experienced the other day? I was at a place where I was about to get on an elevator and there were too many people. So we're like, we'll wait for the next one. Like you do that, you know, sometimes.
Yes.
This elevator started to close and then it herked upwards before the door was completely closed. The door stopped closing and it stopped halfway up, kind of like in speed. Was it? Not speed. It was speed.
Yeah, speed, yeah.
Yeah, and, these people all got stuck there, and I just scurried the hell away. I was like, I'm not just going up there.
No thanks. Yep.
Yeah, forget it. Tom Merritt's worst fear, by the way. I don't know if you guys know this. Little intimate note about Tom Merritt. His worst fear is being trapped in an elevator.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. Yeah.
Next time you see him, just get in an elevator and go, what happened? And bang the button and have it all stop. Just to...
don't.
Yep. You'll be picking leaders. Someone will have to kill Piggy. It'll be bad. Watch
out. The tech you can't control.
Do not do that to my friends.
The next film we are doing is The Mummy. The Mummy.
Correct.
The 1990, what was it? 80, 90,
Brendan Fraser deal. Like
98?
90 something?
99.
99. Right? Yeah. Brendan Fraser, 99. 20 years old then. Oof, think of
Rachel Weisz.
Yeah.
Oh, really? He was 20 years old?
No, the movie's 20 years
old. Oh, the movie's 20 years old. Okay, good. Because it's like, yeah, you looked great for 20 years old.
Yeah, it's...
It's like five when they did Encino Man then.
20... Right. Let me double check that. Yeah, it was 99, so 20 years ago, Stephen Sommers, the original director, by the way, of The Fast and the Furious, and XXX, Stephen Sommers, directed The Mummy. And we'll be doing that movie. And my favorite thing in it is Arnold Vosloo, who plays The Mummy. I love that guy. He's great. I don't think we've seen him since Hard Target, where he was also great. So bring on the Arnold Vosloo.
You know what's a guilty pleasure of mine? 1999's Blast from the Past.
Oh, yeah. I love that movie.
Dude, 99's a great year in general.
Yeah.
The Matrix.
Christopher Walken.
Yeah.
Brendan Fraser.
Yeah.
Alicia Silverstone. Ugh.
So many good things happened that year. I loved it. 99 was a great movie year. Except for episode one. That was terrible. But there you go. That'll be next up on Film Sack, The Mummy. Actually really looking forward to this because I'm a fan of that first one. I like it. It's a good movie. The others are they got weird after that, but that first one was a really fun Indiana Jones mixed with it was good. I liked it a lot, and those Beatles freaked me out, so there's some good freak out going on. And Vosloo's got some cool face stuff going.
They do that stretched out mouth thing that I know you just love.
Oh, yeah. It's the best. It's just really get you going. It's a real turn on for me. Just kidding. It's none of those things.
You stretch your face.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So that's next week right here, The Mummy. If you want to send your own emails into the show, you can. Filmsack@gmail.com. We'd love to read them. Or you can send us a voicemail, 801-471-0462. Just put that in your phone. 801-471-0462. And if you're over the seas, you can just put a plus one in front of that, and it'll get you there, too. If you're over the seas. FilmSack.com is our website. FilmSack on Twitter. Leave us reviews wherever you get your podcasts. That's going to do it for us. For me, for Brian, and for Randy.
Havana.
We'll see you next time. We'll be right back. This show is part of the Frog Pants Network.
Frog Pants Network.
Get more shows like this at frogpants.com.
You'd be no longer drawing breath in Miami.